Well, the name's Jim Rogerson. I'm now 66 years of age, of course, soon coming up 67. I grew up on a small farm. I had two cows to milk by hand before I went to school. When everything was tied up with cows tied up by the neck and barrow and shovel work. When I left school, we were the first year that I had to stay till 16. So I left school in 74, worked for agricultural contractor for 13 months, and then worked for relations on farm for 2 years. Went self-employed at 19. When I was 21, I saw a little advert in paper, and it was erecting farm buildings, timber frame farm buildings. I started then in 1979 as a subcontractor erecting these buildings. And the 88, the company had changed. They were doing other things. They asked if I wanted to buy the business out, but I had to change the name. So I did do. I doubled the volume of my house borrowed, and a wife and two young kids. Youngest was 11 months old. So, I had a lot of sleepless nights, but worked away through farming. I've been involved with farmers all my life. Farmers that are working hard, trying to produce quality food for the nation. They look after the countryside, and it is a labour of love.
I think it's fair to say all of us have got something of that in our blood. Even a little bit of garden I've got here, which is a tiny little, minuscule amount, because I'm on the ground floor in our housing scheme. I do try and look after it. I've got my rosemary bush, I've got some blackcurrant bushes, and there's almost something of that in everybody that wants to do it, whether it's looking after your begonias, growing a few leeks in the back garden. Everybody's got a little bit of farmer in them. But the reason I've asked you to chat to us today, Jim, is to talk about this announcement in the budget last week, which was about inheritance tax on farms. Now, the government is saying actually it's not going to affect very many farmers, but I know that there's an enormous disquiet with this bombshell landing on them.
There was always a problem there. You get a family farm, and so one son wants to carry on, another son isn't interested, or they work for a while and they don't want to do it, or there's, daughters involved as well. Somebody wants out when there's more than one child, and then somebody has, the farm business has to pay the others out to start with, and then try and carry on. You're borrowing money. Now, when you look at this capital gains tax or property relief, as it is, whatever you want to call it, they say, no, it's £1 million per person. So if you have a couple on a farm, they have £2 million. There's £2 million before they start taxing it. But then I heard one of the ministers say, oh, well, you can take a death duty tax, you can take an insurance policy out to cover that. And I just thought then, I looked straight at my wife when I heard that. I thought that's another way to give money to the global elites. It's the global elites that are making money out of the insurance policies. It's not the ordinary person in the street, the ordinary working man. It's the people with a lot of money that make money out of insurance policies. And it seems to be everything this government and the previous one, previous governments for years, have bent over backwards to back the global corporation and make it more and more difficult all the time for small businesses to produce anything, but to survive. But especially, food production now, they seem to be that they don't want anybody to have natural food. Farmers are slaved, and yes, it is a way of life. They love the way of life in one way. They like to produce food, growing healthy animals or growing crops or whatever. There is a, in a way, an hidden competition between farmers to try and do better than the neighbour. They always like to be, or certainly do as well, do, produce good stuff. It's things that the public don't see, but it's there. It's something you're born with. But I suppose in one way, the ordinary person in the street, they try to look after majority of people. They're working. They want a better car than somebody else, so they want to look after it better. They want to keep their house nice. They want to do well. They want to be seen to be doing well. Farmers do carry that natural instinct with them when they're trying to produce food. You know, that's what they're trying to do something that other people can benefit from. This government, well, the previous one as well, it seems to me that we don't have any food security policy in this country. They keep saying we can import it. Where are we going to import food from? Because every country that exports food is being hammered and shut back. It is frighteningly to me, food security, as far as the public goes, is probably to me a bigger threat than what this is in itself in the capital gains tax. But the capital gains tax is a serious issue. I don't know where they'll go, but, you know, a farmer, they struggle to make money. They borrowed money for a long while and kept going. But they, you know, it's a bit a labour of love. Now, if you have to borrow an extra lot of money to pay out 20% tax, capital gains, and pay family out, what have you got left?
Now, you do see a lot of farmers. You're meeting farmers quite a bit. As I understand it, things like the environmental, so-called environmental schemes, and the there are several things. There's also the cost of gas and electricity. These things have all pushed the smaller farmers. So they've got to basically either sell up or else they've got to expand their farm in order to make it break even now.
Yeah, there is a lot of that. It is serious. But you sit back and look, I look at it now, and they've been pushed by the colleges, get bigger, get bigger, get bigger. The grants come out for technology, data caption, you know, some of the grants for livestock farmers. It was all about digital recording stuff, everything being recorded. Again, I don't know, what's the real benefit? Somebody else is taking that data. But food production, to me, now, nationally, or food security, because it's just added to the threat. It is a major threat, and we're adding to the threat, not doing anything to reduce the threat of food security.
Well, look, you know, you're suggesting there, what we've got is we've got governments pushing for expansion of farms, and that is actually pushing families into the likelihood of having to pay this inheritance tax, 20% tax when they die. You know, for quite a few farmers, that's going to mean that that they have to either take out a loan to pay it, or they're going to have to sell the farm when the parents die. And there was one farmer I saw did a YouTube film at the weekend saying, I can no longer afford to die.
I doubt you say, you know, that's probably taking the extreme. His family couldn't afford him to die, probably. Because as I see it, it's the farmers that's already farming. They're not the issue. It's the next generation coming in, you know, but more often than not, you've still got the farmer in his 60s or 70s still in control of everything. The younger generation have all worked away. They're probably doing all the manual work. The actual name at the head of, on the checkbook or whatever, you know, is probably still the parents. You know, the children, you know, might have, they might be able to sign checks now or might have some involvement, but there's still something there, you know, for the older generation. And they're the ones, when he says, if he dies, the family can't afford to pay, you know, the farm won't survive, because to split it up and pay it out, for a son or even a daughter wanted to carry on farming, to pay death duties and pay the rest of the family out, they'd never be able to borrow the capital, the amount of money, and make a go of it anyway after. And I think that's where it will come unstuck.
Well, the thing is, people want to actually plan, don't they? They want to make sure that when they die, it's not some sort of massive disaster falling on the family. Now, you mentioned the global elites, Jim. This is another side which hasn't really been talked about much in the press at all. But the people who are going to be snapping up this cheap farmland, well, it might not be that cheap, but when it has to be sold, are the likes of BlackRock. They're people like Bill Gates who are buying up massive amounts of farming. But it's not him as a personal individual that's buying it. It's through trusts and foundations and companies. None of these businesses die. None of them have to pay inheritance tax. So it seems to me that this land is being chased away from families who do have heads of the family that die every once in a while, into the hands of corporations and the global elite, whose businesses sit there and they're basically immortal.
Yeah. Well, I do that. You know, I wonder myself, how are they getting away with all these trusts? You know, we've got all foreign companies coming in now, running our businesses. And, you know, if they're foreign owned, the profits made abroad, or the cream, 15, 20% of the turnover off's gone abroad to start with. So it doesn't really make a profit in this country. So they pay very little tax in this country. The profits all made offshore somewhere else. It'd be interesting to know how many of the politicians, you know, the MPs, where all their investments are. It'd be surprising. I bet that a lot of them, certainly when they get to minister level, they'll all have offshore investments, or it's in family trusts that won't be paying this tax, this inheritance tax. There's something that, you know, somebody said to me last night, it was, the very rich, they never pay the tax because all the money's offshore. The people at the bottom doing nothing, well, they pay a bit of tax, I suppose, through benefits with VAT and everything, you know, where you spend money. But they're squeezing the middle ground, the people that's actually working, you know, the genuine hardworking people, they're being squeezed even more into a smaller group and expected to pay a bigger chunk. It doesn't look good for anybody that's working.
No, not for working people that the government is supposed to be supporting. In the sort of bigger picture, you also mentioned food security, Jim. How much food do we import? Do you know roughly? Because obviously, if there are, I mean, I drive around, I see the, loads of set aside there. There's increasing numbers of solar farms and things popping up in the country. It's almost as if the countryside has become a playground. It's not a sort of place to grow food in some places anymore. It seems sometimes that's been the whole agriculture thing, whether it's livestock or arable, seems to be being pushed out of the countryside.
Yeah. I mean, the climate change lobby have so many half-truths. You can't say they tell lies, but the problem is they're so economical with telling the truth. In reality, what the public hear is lies. It's just so. I had one as a councillor on Monday night, listening to somebody on carbon literacy training, you know, and they're just so economical with the truth, blaming cattle for it. And yet, ruminant animals grazing grass is probably one of the best carbon capture the world has. But the global corporations aren't making money out of that. It's not good for you. I mean, and food health. Coincidentally, it's 3 week on Saturday, I attended a brain health conference in Manchester. I paid to go myself. I heard about it and I thought it was interesting. I want to go. And doctors coming together, people from all over this country and a doctor from Australia, talking about how natural food is healing all sorts of problems. It is phenomenal. Big Pharma don't like people eating natural food because there's no money in it for them.
See, this is it, isn't it? Pharma and pharma. So you've got the pharmaceutical industry and you've got farmers. Now, you're talking about the pharmaceutical industry, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. And it is a big thing for them because in the pharmaceutical industry and the chemical companies that supply fertilizer or all the sprays that sprayed on crops, if you look in a supermarket, all the fruit and veg, How much of that is grown naturally now? And most of it will be grown with hydroponics and artificial fertilizer and all the chemicals. It's not really natural food. People don't see that. And everything we're doing is appears to be trying to destroy natural food. Look at the thing with the chickens, wanting everybody, if you've got a chicken in your backyard, everybody has to register your chicken. It seems to be they're attacking anybody that wants to be sustainable, self-sustainable. We've got to attack it, stop people being able to feed yourself. It's just frightening. In my mind now, I fear that the globalists seem to be, they see food as having a 12-month, 2-year shelf life, powdered, dried in a packet, like a pot noodle. So there's no weight to it. They can ship it or sail it, whatever, transport it around the world for nothing because it's all dried. There's no weight to it. So it's all been through a factory, all been processed. The public need to question what they are actually eating. And one of the doctors that was speaking when I was on this brain health conference actually said that in reality, that most of the stuff, 90% of the stuff sold by a supermarket should really be coming with a public health warning. It's frightening. But I mean, there's doctors, if you start looking for, with natural cured doctors around the world curing brain diseases, who certainly see massive improvements in a lot of these mental illnesses and Alzheimer's and dementia and all these things by people eating natural food. And if anybody wants to look, just what's gone on with Dr. Malcolm Kendrick and she's from Monmouth, Zoe Arkham. With the Mail on Sunday, having to print an apology for slating them over a statin issue. I mean, it's colossal. But the money made by these big pharmaceutical companies, big pharma, from these drugs is colossal. And anything that attacks their base to sell produce has to be shut down.
Well, it's
And
funny you say that because I just bought some tomatoes last week and some plums from the supermarket, and neither of them, Jim, tasted of anything. They tasted like sort of pulpy stuff, which was mostly water. I wonder whether that old Tom and Barbara Good series, there was something actually quite deep in that, because they were saying, they were a couple that went for a hippie couple that went for self-sufficiency. And what you're saying is you think that's the absolute antithesis of what the real global power brokers want.
They don't want that. They want control. If I mean, if it goes forever, if you look into it, and I have looked into it, and I've listened to doctors that are only telling you to eat natural food, they are curing people of all sorts of illnesses globally by getting people eating natural food that we used to eat 50 or 60 years ago.
It's funny, isn't
But
it? Because the whole idea of the organic movement, well, if you go back beyond the Second World War, all food pretty much, I mean, there's a bit of fertilizer, but almost all food was organic before World War II. Suddenly what we've got is we've got a food supply system which is delivering a load of rubbish food. And if you want to get the decent food, the organic food, then you're going to have to pay extra for it.
But one of the things, if you look at, they started telling us what to eat in the late 70s and the beginning of the 80s. That's when they started coming out advising people what to eat. And when you look worldwide, since they started that, public health has gone down and down and down. The amount of new illnesses that's appeared is colossal. So why are we blaming food that we've been eating for millennia, hundreds of years, thousands of years, for modern day diseases that have only just appeared in the last 40 years, sort of thing? Look at what the new stuff that's been introduced in the last 40 years, and that's where most of your problems come from.
Well, you might be right. And what about farmers? It's almost like they don't like farmers. The government now sees farmers as some sort of annoyance that they want to slowly get rid of by forcing them out of business and letting someone else buy the land and do other things with the land. And yet the farmers have been around for about 3,000 years. They brought us out of barbarism and started civilization by having a food surplus. But so why doesn't this government want the farmers?
Because, well, I'm afraid I've got so cynical, I don't trust any of the politicians at Westminster. Doesn't matter which party you look at. To me, they're all controlled by the global elite and the likes of Klaus Schwab with the World Economic Forum. They are puppets for them. They've come up with, you know, I said we've got a change of government. All we've got is a different colour of paint on the policies. Because you can't say that the policies haven't improved for the working man. There's nobody will ever tell me that the Labour Party is there to support the ordinary working man, which in my mind, that's what the role was. And these today certainly aren't. But the Tory party have only been interested in the very, very wealthy at the top. And I'm afraid, I think the others are. We look at the Labour Party under Blair. And I always said soon after he'd become in power, he should have been done for treason by the Labour Party because he absolutely walked all over the ordinary working man. There was nothing in there to say they were going to support the ordinary person, and they never have done. And to me, they are all just puppets now for the global elite. And well, we don't live in a democracy anymore, I'm sorry to say.
Although you're a country lad, you're living up near Manchester and those big northern cities that used to be incredible, you know, factories everywhere, industry pumping out manufactured goods. And you and I in our lifetimes have seen that all go. I mean, what are these cities for nowadays?
Well, I do question that, and I haven't looked closely at it yet. I don't know when they've updated it. When the Labour government came in with the first draft of going through the National Planning Policy Framework, there was something for laboratories, distribution, tech centres, or something like that. And I looked at that. None of them is going to create any breadwinner jobs. The country, what made, it doesn't matter whether it, well, what made Britain great, but it's same to any country, wherever you go to, you need to be able to start with the raw material and add value to it by making it into something. We aren't making anything in this country anymore. And a lot of countries, they've moved it all. We're making everything in China. So unless any country, you know, I'm not trying to be racist here, it's any country there needs to start with the raw material and add value to it. That's how you make money. You know, you bring some prosperity to the to that region or that area or that country, whatever you're doing. But if a region can't start with a basic raw material and add value to it, I'm afraid there's no real money for that. And, you know, the other week we were over something somebody said about P&O or whatever, and St. Stormer was meeting all these foreign people for foreign investors to come. Why can't we support British business to invest in this country rather than penalising them and have to worry about supporting foreign investors to come here and set businesses up? If we were serious about the country, we'd be encouraging entrepreneurs to set businesses up, you know, locally and retain the profits in the country.
So what do you reckon to the new leadership of the Conservative Party? It's taken ages to choose a new leader, hasn't it, Jim?
I'm not sure. I will reserve comment on that. To be honest, I've got so fed up. I've lost interest. I don't know whether who else you could pick from anyway. I've just lost total interest in it. I mean, although in principle, I was always a Conservative at heart. Certainly at the moment, unless they really get their act together, I couldn't see me ever voting for them again. But, you know, you're stuck who to vote for. Yeah, I think it showed in the election because Labour did not win the last election. They got the most seats, but Keir Starmer only got about 90% of the votes that Jeremy Corbyn got in 2019. They were saying what such a massive victory it were. Hang on, when you didn't get as many as Jeremy Corbyn got, that's not a massive victory it shows that even the Labour people weren't turning out for Labour. So, yeah, I mean, they've got the seats, but it's not a true reflection of how the country feels, really. You know, there was a very low turnout, so people stopped at home. You know, yes, they got the most votes and technically they're in charge, but it was hardly any singing endorsement of the policy, was it?
So if listeners are interested in following what you do, do you have a blog or are you on social media, Jim?
No, sorry, I don't. I never have done. People say I should do, but I've never been involved in the social media. A lot of people there. I talk to people locally, you know, I can talk to people all over, but, you know, I've got the business. So I never have done that. Perhaps I should do. I keep saying, because there's so many things I can come in, you know, I could write a book, probably write a few if you list it all. You know, I mean, we look at pensions now. We have to back these big global corporations. We need to look after them. They convinced everybody, say, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, to start private pensions and let your pensions invest in with these big corporations. Somebody else, no offence, but a lot of people now, they're in the mid-50s where they should have had the mortgage paid off. They'll still be paying a mortgage and all the money's invested and it's controlled by somebody else. They haven't got their own strength behind them. You know, they've not got the weight behind. And it's designed long mortgages and keep paying it. Somebody else controls your money. And then they're frightened that, oh, well, you can't upset them because pension pots, your pension's going to drop through the floor if we upset these foreign. This has been cleverly manipulated, I think, for the last 50 years, if not the 100 years, what's going on worldwide. And because it's a global policy, the attack on farmers is global. It's not just in this country. The attack might not just be the same, but whichever way you look at it, livestock producers are being hammered worldwide. People don't want it countrywide. So I don't know where our food's going to come from, because every country that's exported food, they're trying to stop the farmers producing.
So, look, we've seen what the French are up to. Do you think the British farmers have got the stomach to fight the government over this?
I don't know. I hope they do in one way, but I hope they listen. But to me, it's the public they need. The public need to wake up the fact that the food security isn't there. If you're happy eating insect protein, which, you know, we're being told we're going to get, and ground up cereals in like muesli bar or something like that, that's bland, some to a pot noodle, good luck to you. But it's certainly not a nutritious food. I mean, I was type 2 diabetic nearly 18 months ago, July, beginning of July last year, 23. And they wanted to put me on metformin straight away, did the doctors. They weren't going to let me out. And I said, well, you're wasting your time giving it me because I will not take it. I'll sort this out with diet. And the big argument, you'll never get your blood sugar down with diet alone. So give me a chance. Within 6 months, I halved it without doing anything silly by just cutting carbs out. I really hammered the carbs. Very rarely I eat a potato at home. Don't really eat potatoes at home. I eat very little bread. I do eat a bit of a soft time, odd cakes and biscuits, but I try to keep it very low. If I go out for a meal, I will eat, you know, the potatoes and veg that come. But I would never put extra on my plate now. And if it was carvery or self-service, I'd be looking for everything with the maximum meat to it. I do eat a lot of meat now and a lot of cheese. But I lost weight. I'd been having, well, not say I was trouble breathing. They were saying I had at the doctors. But yeah, literally really got the blood sugar down. It lost weight, improved. You know, purely cutting carbs back. And yet they're telling us we all need to eat carbs. It's the carbs that's making everybody ill.
Fascinating. All right, Jim Rogerson, thanks very much for joining us again.
Thanks, Tony, and all the best to you.